Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. I'm Patricia Murphy, and I'd like to welcome you to IBM's 2019 Investor Briefing. We are webcasting this event live today from New York, and the timing is just about 3 weeks after the completion of our Red Hat acquisition. So a lot of what we're going to focus on today is the hybrid cloud opportunity and how IBM is uniquely positioned to address that. Over the next two to two and a half hours, we have a four-part agenda. During the first three parts, we have several of our senior leaders who are going to talk about how IBM and Red Hat are better together. And then we're going to wrap it up today with a Q&A with those same executives. Since we have a web audience today, we're going to take questions over the web. You can submit questions at any time. There's a button on the top right of your screen that says Ask a Question. If you submit a question, we'll take the question here. I'm going to moderate the session. I'm going to read out questions, and I'm going to do that without attribution. It's the same way we held the event last year. We got really good feedback on it, and I think it really allows more of our investors to feel comfortable asking a question. Today, we're going to focus on the medium term, and so we're going to make some forward-looking statements. There are risk factors inherent in those statements, and information on IBM's risk factors is included in our filings with the SEC and on the IBM website. We also have a number of non-GAAP measures, and those have been reconciled to the appropriate GAAP measures, also on the SEC site and on the IBM site. Finally, this event is live today, and a replay will be available by this time tomorrow. So with that, I am very pleased to introduce our first speaker. Ginni Rometty is IBM's Chairman, President, and CEO, and also our host for today. Thank you.
Good. Thank you, Pat. So hello to everyone, and I get to open this up today by doing the strategic overview. And as Pat just said to you, we just closed Red Hat, so this is timely. And then everything I say, the senior team is going to build upon. But let me give you the top line, and I'm going to do it in three different pieces. The first one, I'd like to cover about what we're hearing from clients, particularly as what we call their entry into chapter two of their own digital reinvention. Then the second is how IBM and Red Hat are better together. But it's really about how we uniquely go after that over $1 trillion hybrid cloud opportunity. But then third, I'd like to also talk to you about what does it mean for IBM's financial profile. Now, Jim will go into more of this, but if you think about what we built with our own transformation, the foundation that's been set, now add Red Hat into that. What we will talk about today is starting next year, 2020, all of this coming together returns IBM to a sustainable growth trajectory, continued margin expansion, and increased free cash flow. So let me back up now, start at the top. What are we hearing from clients in chapter two? Look, one thing hasn't changed. Any client you meet, every client is on some sort of digital journey. And the underlying piece motivating them remains data. Everyone will tell you it's the basis of competitive advantage. You need to look no further than any newspaper. But there's been a chapter one, and we've coined it as outside in. And what I mean by that, think about most of what you've seen people do, and certainly what we've seen clients do. Outside in means driven by their customers. So customer in. So what do? You change everything that makes it easier for a customer to interface with you. So whether that's buying, servicing. And typically what people did was they were able to build new things. So a lot of new apps flourished in chapter one, and it was the beginning of the cloud. So all that change that you could rapidly do on the front end now starts to hit into their back-end systems. And those have not necessarily kept up with each other. I think of some great work we've done at GEICO. On one hand, we've done lots of work all about changing the front, new renter's insurance, easy to do it. But there's a day when you have a claim. And now we're doing the work on the back-end system for the claims. And this is why we've said, when you really stand back for the clients we serve, 20% of what they've done has moved to some kind of cloud environment. But there's another 80% to go. And that takes me to chapter two. So if you just want to think of it simply, instead of outside in, think of it as inside out. Meaning now you have to modernize those core infrastructures. And it does mean what's mission critical, those core apps, move to a hybrid cloud. There is another piece, because now you're going to start to see these workflows become intelligent, and that'll lead to scaling AI. And we're going to do that in another time, in another webcast, because we're going to focus on hybrid cloud here. But the benefits are pretty obvious if you're a client. Yes, it's savings. Yes, it's productivity. But you also get innovation in that core. And I think there's an important point to remember for our clients. Now it allows anyone to out-innovate. And so when we talk to a client about a cognitive enterprise, you know, there's three common themes. They're fueled by data, at the end, there'll be, you'll see all these workflows made intelligent with AI, and then underpinning that, they're built on an open and a flexible hybrid cloud. So it just takes me back to, if you're a client, that's why today we're going to focus on hybrid cloud, that part of chapter two. Now, I should tell you, it's also because it's a very substantial opportunity. Again, 80% still to be moved into a hybrid cloud environment. And it's one we are uniquely suited for. And that's part of what I want to be able to communicate. So in doing that, I want to back up because I think it's good to have an understanding of, for chapter two, what's the clear origin and what is the clear destination? Because it really explains why IBM and Red Hat together are a really powerful combination. So let's talk about that. So step back. Beginning with the origin, today's IT environment, said simply. So for clients, when you say mission-critical work, what comes to their mind is middleware and infrastructure. And when you say mission-critical apps, you will hear clients say things like, this is what runs my business, this is what's core, this is transactional. They'll say this has a lot of scrutiny, regulatory, security. This is any time I make a change, it's high impact. But. When I want to change these, what's the challenge? Some people call that monolithic. I mean, that would give you sort of an image of things all sort of messed together. That's not usually what they're talking about when they say it's monolithic. They're monolithic if you talk to technical people because most of these apps are what they call stateful. So when you start a banking transaction, you get so far to launch it. If something goes wrong, you got to back it all the way out. You don't get to just start over and wonder if it completed. So that makes these monolithic. That can make them expensive to change, but more importantly, can make them high risk. So what clients want, they want to have innovation in that core. Yes, less cost. But the third part is they got to have someone de-risk the journey for them. So now take that as the origin, and now let's talk about the destination, the hybrid cloud. Why is the hybrid cloud the destination? Well, one, it allows you to modernize these apps because you can modularize them. You'll hear words like microservices, APIs. Think of it as renovating a house. Then you'll, of course, as you renovate, perhaps room at a time or bring in new pieces connected to others, it means multiple public clouds, multiple private clouds, and connection to traditional IT. And then you want to seamlessly manage security and manage that whole estate. But I would add one more thing when I said the destination's hybrid cloud. Make no mistake, clients want open. And the standards have already been set in the industry. That means Linux, containers, Kubernetes. That is the winning architecture. So this takes me to why IBM and Red Hat uniquely positioned now. So first think about the origin. We, IBM, have unique access to two really critical different sources of mission-critical work. Well, one is our products. It's built many of these mission-critical apps. So whether it's our middleware, our data products, they run on a mainframe. The second source, though, is our run environment, because we manage really serious operations around the world. I mean, we actually manage 90% of all of the credit card transactions coming through. All the wireless connections, 50% IBM in the world. So this is our strategic outsourcing business, our application management outsourcing business. So origin, two unique sources of input. Second is this new destination. This is where IBM and Red Hat together, the platform. It is the ideal destination for mission-critical work. And it is built on the architecture of the future, Linux, containers, Kubernetes. So if you indulge me in an analogy, I think of this platform, the Red Hat platform, the hybrid cloud stack we're talking about. If you thought about it as a race car for Chapter 2, modern car needs fuel. Chapter 2's fuel is mission-critical workloads. IBM uniquely supplies mission-critical workloads. And if you compare this to what I generally call Chapter 1, what you saw in Chapter 1 is companies that owned end-user apps, that customer-facing, that fueled the cloud. In Chapter 2 now, those that own mission-critical fuel the cloud. Now, this, in a good way, takes great advantage of our incumbency because you can bring an innovation engine to a client, and you go ahead and bring them a way to de-risk this journey. So think a little bit about it. Our software portfolio. Yes, in size, $26 billion. But that's not the point. We have helped these clients build these apps. We know these apps. Second really important point. You have to have a trusted relationship with a client here. Now, our $46 billion services business, the world's largest, but it's more about the relationships with 30,000 clients and that the team understands those processes. What does it mean in financial services and to have all the certifications and to have the regulator come through? What does it mean to run not only the infra, the process, the application side? And that's what 250,000 IBMers know, not only the infrastructure, but the industry side. So a couple facts for you, again, together. Red Hat Enterprise Linux, it is the number one commercial distribution, public and private cloud. Second, Red Hat OpenStack. It is the standard hybrid platform. It goes cross clouds, cross vendors, cross applications. It is, and I'll come back to this, it's the only horizontal play out there. I'll come back to why that's important. And IBM, number one enterprise services, leading hybrid cloud provider, and you know our footprint, 175 countries. So I want you to just sort of, or I should sort of pause and think about IBM owns the origin destination. IBM now owns a new destination, the origin position. We now own the new destination position. And it is a horizontal platform that transcends all clouds on the winning architecture. This allows us to meet clients where they are. But if you're a client, and if I could repeat this 10 times, it allows you to build once and run anywhere. So together, IBM and Red Hat, we end up laying the foundation for what is really the next generation of IT. So this is why, for those of you that track the closing of Red Hat, you saw such really visceral, I think, reaction from clients and enthusiasm. So whether it was Morgan Stanley, immediately vocal about it. Ed Bastian at Delta, Red Hat client, IBM client, but now bigger, the two of us together, to really all in on the digital transformation. And you saw the announcement that I made with AT&T and AT&T with us around AT&T Business, a major cloud announcement. So what are we doing? The mission-critical apps that run all of AT&T Business will move to the IBM cloud. By the way, on the consumer side and the business side, we will manage all their infrastructure. But you're also going to see Red Hat leverage now to manage the network as we all move to software-defined networks and plenty of 5G enterprise use cases. And the team will talk more about this. Arvind will, Mark Foster will, these new markets that are coming up now, of which you just see two of them right there. So I have talked a lot about now that this is a horizontal platform, goes cross clouds, and allows us to manage all this and integrate it. But I want to make no mistake on something. IBM also intends to have the best hybrid multi-cloud platform out there. And that means cross public and private. So why will IBM have its own best stack? So first, our own public cloud. It is native Linux, containers, Kubernetes. The team has spent 2 years rebuilding a completely native public cloud. Arvind will talk to you more about it because it covers everything from ease of use to security. Then you look at our own private cloud, and the momentum's pretty obvious. 600 new clients in the last 18 months. So whether it's Westpac, Santander, Hertz, it crosses a wide spectrum. And to me, this is just the beginning of going after this greater than $1 trillion market opportunity. Now, we've been preparing, though. So what's the strategy to win? So I want you to, if I can, and the team again, Martin Schroeder and both Jim Whitehurst, will go through this in more detail. But at the top line, think of two different ways that we win and win more. One is a horizontal play. Sell more Red Hat. Why? Size and scale. The other is a vertical play. So when you think of it vertical on the IBM side, we optimize everything we do for Red Hat and therefore sell more IBM products and services. So first one, as I said, is horizontal. Sell more Red Hat. Just a few numbers. We are in 4x the countries, at least 10x the sales force. And when you look at this, varying penetrations between Red Hat and IBM in their clients. So plenty of opportunity. And we'll incent the entire IBM sales force across the Red Hat product family. But, and Jim will talk more about this, make no mistake about our commitment to their independence and their neutrality. Because another large opportunity is Red Hat has the only horizontal platform out there. It's going to run on all clouds. Then second. Second is vertical, all right? So sell more IBM software and services. And here, Arvind Krishna, Mark Foster will talk more. I hope you caught an announcement. We had a big announcement yesterday. A lot of things went on yesterday in the market. Now, first it is our software portfolio made entirely cloud native. Arvind will talk to you about what that means. But it's also been optimized for OpenShift. The guys have been very busy over the last month. You take those two thoughts together, cloud native, optimized for OpenShift, Red Hat, that means IBM software can run anywhere. Anywhere OpenShift runs, which is everywhere, IBM can run. Call it middleware anywhere. All public clouds, all private clouds. Now, we do it via something called a cloud pack. I bring it up here in the intro only because it's a pre-integrated bundle, cloud native, one click to the IBM cloud. We had another announcement, and that was around bringing OpenShift to the mainframe. Therefore, mainframe participates in that cloud native network out there. And we do well over 30 billion transactions a day through those systems. And then, third point, and I think this will become obvious as everyone talks and even what I've shared already, is this ability now to open up new workloads for IBM. Because think about that. If you're going to put software into a network, in a software-defined network, every client now cares that this is who's going to support it for decades. So we've already had many calls out of telco in that area as an example, 5G use cases, networks themselves. So let me then speak a moment to then the opportunity for services, because I've spoke a little bit about products. The services team too, who you'll see here, they've been very busy themselves. So we've been simplifying and building unique offerings. If I just put them in two big buckets, it's about moving and migrating applications to a hybrid cloud world, and it's about managing them, which, by the way, is all reoccurring revenue. So what have we done uniquely? One of the unique announcements actually yesterday, again, the guys have been busy and the gals have been busy. It's all been about building now the world's largest Red Hat certified consultant practice that's out there, announced yesterday. Second, the IBM Garage method for the hybrid cloud. Third, now around the world, big cloud migration factories. And fourth, services has its own multi-cloud platform. You know, so to think of that as a control panel across everything and everything that happens for a client, which is what they badly need. Jim will talk to you about, Jim Whitehurst, about one of the inhibitors. As people go to move more and more into this environment, they need more managed operations. So that takes me to my third and final point, really to wrap up, and it's really full circle. It's the IBM financial profile in the go forward. You know, Pat used the words, what about the midterm, 2020, 2021? And again, you've seen the progress we've made on the foundation of IBM through our own transformation. I've talked a little bit about Red Hat and how we can scale it. So starting next year, 2020, all of this returns IBM to that sustainable growth trajectory, continued margin expansion, and increased free cash flow. So I think you'll see the team is very confident about this in the future. So let me sort of just paint what everyone's going to cover, and I turn over to each one of them, and then I and the team will come back up for Q&A. So we've got a pretty rich set of segments here. We'll try to keep it tight. The first one is going to be Jim Whitehurst, newest member of my team, CEO of Red Hat. Jim will talk about the platform he's built, but what does it take to be a number one platform, extend it and grow it, and what's the benefit of IBM? Then you'll meet Arvind Krishna. You've met him many times before. He's going to break down that over $1 trillion cloud opportunity, tell you a bit more about what does it mean when we said our software is now cloud native, and then what does it mean to have the most secure end-to-end multi-cloud stack out there. Of course, followed by services, and as you know, I have Mark Foster working across all of services. He's going to talk about the opportunity, but go into more detail than I just did on what the unique capabilities are. Then Martin Schroeder, who runs all of sales, is going to come up and talk about how do we sell and scale IBM Red Hat together. And then you have, I know, the weighted star you're waiting for is Jim Kavanaugh. Now, Jim's going to cover both, so you know, both the short and the medium term. So we will talk about in 2019 all the dynamics and what that means for 2019, and then the midterm 2021. And then we'll take our questions. So my pleasure. First up, Jim Whitehurst. Jim, come on up here.
Great. All right. Thank you.
Introduce Appreciate you to IBM investors and future investors.
All right. Well, good morning, everyone, and thanks so much for being here. And I really appreciate the opportunity to spend a few minutes to talk about why I'm so excited about the opportunity that we have together. Let me also say it's been really only a little over 3 weeks since we closed, and I am more excited today than I was the day we've closed, based on talking to clients and partners and seeing the working cadences that we've put together and the net new opportunities that together that we can deliver for our clients. Martin's going to talk more about the obvious opportunity in front of us to take the depth of relationships that IBM has, the breadth of its distribution, the scope in terms of countries, and the real opportunity that has for all of Red Hat products to be able to expand our footprint and serve our clients together. I want to spend the time talking about why I'm so excited about our long-term ability to drive the next generation architecture that enterprises will be using. If you can bear with me for one kind of background page on open source and the competitive and economic dynamics of open source, I think it's important to lay that foundation for why we're so excited about the opportunity. I often get asked, you know, how do you make billions of dollars selling free software? And the simple answer to that is open source is a development model, and we talk about a big difference between projects and products. So projects are these open source communities that drive feature and functionality where we have, you know, thousands or tens of thousands of participants that are adding code and continually making the products better and more secure. And you'll hear things like Linux or OpenStack or Kubernetes. Those are upstream projects of free software. And one of the dynamics you'll see in open source, which is different than in traditional software, is it really is winner take all. There are other open source alternative operating systems like FreeBSD or, you know, other container management platforms, but you typically have one platform that ends up being 90%+ of usage and 90%+ of contribution. And it's just the nature of when you have large communities, bigger communities are able to innovate faster, and so you get this coalescing around projects. Importantly then, how those projects become products that are actually used is a related but distinct activity. So when you think about an open source project, that's a lot of people working together in source code or functionality. When you're putting something in production in your data center, that's bits. That's a product. That is something that is real, stable, that people need to understand. And so what Red Hat does is we work in projects, but we create products. And the products have a similar dynamic where it typically works that there is one reference standard at any layer in the stack. And that's good for all ecosystem participants. So if you take Linux, for example, Red Hat has become the default reference Linux platform. And the reason that happens is because if you're a hardware vendor, you don't want to have to offer mission-critical support against 50 different versions of or flavors of Linux that are out there. If you're an ISV, you don't want to have to build capability and versions of your software for 50 different versions of an operating system. So over time, there's a convergence typically down to one reference standard. And Red Hat Enterprise Linux, we call it RHEL, is that for Linux. And the benefits are work for everyone. If you're a global system integrator, you have, you know, one kind of major platform on which you need to build skills. If you're an ISV, you have one primary distribution that you need to build your software on. Same for OEMs, same for public clouds. We spent the last 15 years building that for Red Hat Enterprise Linux. And if you look today, Red Hat Enterprise Linux is the 70%+ share of paid Linux out there. There's certainly a lot of free Linux out there, which is great, and that's our feedstock and our kind of demand generation. But for enterprise workload cases, Red Hat Enterprise Linux is 70%+ share of paid Linux. And again, the reason it is because everything certifies to it. The reason everybody certifies and builds skills to it is last year everyone used it. So there really is a network effect associated with a piece of open source software. So while it is free, that coalescing around and the reinforcing of by being early, we were able to build an ecosystem, and that ecosystem got people to use it, which builds a bigger ecosystem, which gets people to use it. The platform effects and the network effects are really key to driving that. Now, I know we'll talk a lot about the container platform. I have to say, Red Hat Enterprise Linux, while it's the reference standard for operating systems today, it's still growing double digit. It's the platform on which net new innovation happens. And so it continues to take share from Windows. It continues to grow double digits. And we expect going forward that it will continue to be a key driver of Red Hat and our growth, especially with the incremental distribution and capability and credibility that IBM provides. But what I really want to spend some more time talking about today and what really excites us is what we are doing in the next generation of infrastructure, which is, think of it as an operating system for a cloud. That's based on Linux containers and Kubernetes. And as I said, open source projects are kind of winner take all. I think without a doubt, Linux and Linux containers have won that battle, and Kubernetes, which is again another open source project on how you basically manage a large container footprint, has won that battle to be the default container platform. We bring those things together, those projects together in a product called OpenShift. And OpenShift is today the leading container platform, and it runs across all major clouds. It runs on-premise. It runs on the major virtualization platforms. It's truly the only hybrid multi-cloud container platform that's out in production. And, you know, one of the reasons we're so excited about IBM is IBM is the only other major large technology player that has a vision of horizontal. And we saw this with Linux. It is by far the best thing for clients in terms of cost and in terms of innovation. Linux itself unlocked a massive amount of innovation that happened because it was hybrid and worked across any environment. That is even more so true in the container platform. So we're excited about the commercial opportunity that it creates, but I'm particularly excited about the innovation and cost savings that it unlocks for our clients. Now, the container platform does more and is a lot bigger than an operating system. And so if you look at our price points, if you look at the value it provides, it's literally an order of magnitude larger than the operating system category. So that's what we're so excited about, is our opportunity together to be able to land that this is the default choice platform in the same way that Red Hat Enterprise Linux is the default choice at the operating system. And I'll come back and talk about why IBM is uniquely capable of helping us do that. Before I do that, I've heard so many questions about, well, hey, if you're part of IBM, does this somehow make other partners not want to work with you? And I have to say, I spend a lot of my time, because we're in the ecosystem building business, I spend a lot of my time with our partners, whether those are on-premise infrastructure providers, whether those are public clouds, ISVs, SIs, and I can tell you across all of those, there is a lot of excitement about how the IBM and Red Hat together is going to help accelerate their businesses. You have to recognize, we often want to talk about this platform as a migration. So we're migrating applications from, you know, some other legacy platform to something new. No one migrates an application to run it as it is on a new platform. When you're migrating, you are modernizing it. You're exposing data. You're exposing APIs. So these systems can now be part of new functionality, new businesses, able to create kind of additional transformation and innovation for customers. So yes, there's a component of moving applications, but the vast majority of the activity and the workload and the value is net new functionality that is getting created. And so for SIs, I've talked to many, and they'll say, wow, if IBM can be the catalyst to help drive more transformation, we're going to win big in that too. ISVs, well, hey, if we're going to start getting workloads moving around and then net new functionality attached to that, great new opportunities for ISVs. You know, public cloud providers, to put simply, if you can run, you know, IBM MQ on your public cloud, that's a good net new workload on the cloud, but it also creates a whole new set of opportunities as new applications get built leveraging that infrastructure. So across the board, everyone we've talked to has been really excited about this, and this certainly accelerates OpenShift, but it accelerates the commercial ecosystem for all of the people involved around OpenShift. Now let me talk about why I'm particularly so excited about IBM and why we believe that this propels us in just a tremendous new way. So we have early leadership, right? We've Red Hat before we joined IBM had over 1,000 enterprise customers running OpenShift. Combined with IBM's private cloud offering, we have over 1,600 customers on a Kubernetes platform. And so that's good leadership, but truly getting the adoption you need to land a reference standard platform requires early adoption, early marquee customer wins, early workloads, and that builds over time because as you get some workloads, you build new workloads. You build more capability to be able to address more workloads. And so we've been in this for a long time, and we recognize the importance of taking early leadership and accelerating hard into that. And that's what IBM brings to the table, just a massive amount of workloads. Now, whether that is the commercial organizations and the size and scope and breadth and depth being able to land OpenShift in new places to IBM's software stack, which in the enterprise is just a huge amount of workloads, landing that on this platform just accelerates usage of the platform, which creates new opportunities. The consulting organizations, whether it's GBS helping drive transformation of applications or GTS as a capability to run these applications. And I should say that's one I hear over and over and again when we get clients who land this platform. The first thing they say is, I don't want to build skills to run it. Can you run it for me? Or who can help me run this? So this brings opportunity to a whole new set of opportunities around where and how those applications are going to be run as well. To systems and the footprint that IBM has across non-x86 platforms in particular, where a lot of these transactional systems run. So this creates opportunity for us to dramatically accelerate OpenShift in the early stages. And as that becomes a network choice, as the commercial ecosystem is built around it today, then people buy it, so the commercial ecosystem continues to grow. So it does have this reinforcing effect. We're still in the early days. We're already seeing just a tremendous amount of incremental interest in OpenShift, given the credibility of IBM, whether that is to be able to run it at scale, to be able to support it at scale, to be able to deliver applications on it at scale. And one final point that doesn't quite fit with this page, but I think this is really key as well. Red Hat has a very strong culture, and I know there are things written around about how our culture fits in this. Our culture is mission-driven. Our people are excited about landing open source as the default choice for the next generation of computing. And IBM is making that possible. I'll just say the emails I've gotten from engineers, the comments that I've gotten are so excited about the potential for us to have a far greater impact on the world by being a part of IBM. We absolutely believe the world will be a better place if we can drive a faster pace of innovation. And without a doubt, an open source horizontal hybrid multi-cloud platform is the foundation on which technology innovation will occur. It's the best thing for our clients. We believe it's the best thing for society. And so I think you'll see IBM engineers and Red Hat engineers really, really excited on what we can do together going forward. So that's the core of Red Hat and where we see the potential to grow. With that, I'd like to hand it over to Arvind Krishna, who's going to talk about the opportunities for IBM software.
Thanks, Jim.
Thanks, Arvind.
So, good morning, good evening, everyone. So I'm going to build on a couple of points. First, Ginny mentioned the trillion-plus opportunity, and I'm going to go into that. And then I'm going to get into where Jim talked about the engineers are excited about working together. Well, what are they working on, and how does that bring benefit to the world at large? So first, on the trillion, or to be more precise, the 1.2 trillion opportunity, I want to break it down. First, there's about $100 billion that are sold as components to all of the cloud providers, public and private. I would say that we participate in that, but that's not the biggest opportunity. Next up is the $150 billion that is both public cloud and private cloud infrastructure, and we absolutely participate in that. There's $350 billion that you label as cloud software. You might think of this as platform as a service, software as a service, as well as all of the modern forms of software that people use to drive cloud innovation. And lastly, there's $550 billion on top as services. So if you look at that, half the total opportunity is still services, and I'm going to focus on the 350. By the way, when you look at the world at large, and this is data from IDC and many other surveys that we and others have done, 92% of the world's enterprises have hybrid cloud environments. And by hybrid, we mean they have a mixture of traditional, private, and public. Of that, though, only 10% really believe that they can holistically support it all, but 50% would like to get there. So that is a big opportunity in terms of from where we are to where we need to go. So let's get into the $350 billion and to now drive down on the various points that Ginny mentioned and that Jim began to lay out. We are going to make all IBM software cloud native. We announced that yesterday, and it goes across private and public clouds built on OpenShift, and I'll explain that in some detail. We are going to provide a preferred destination for mission-critical workloads, the end-to-end stack that Ginny mentioned. We're going to create more opportunities for Red Hat by the way we make all of the software using both RHEL and OpenShift as preferred destinations. And lastly, there's so many new workloads that are about to come, and Ginny mentioned one of them, 5G is an exemplar, but there's many more, and we'll get into how that drives more opportunity for IBM. So we've talked about going horizontal. IBM and Red Hat deliver the only true hybrid multi-cloud platform. And so if you bear with me for a minute, I'll begin to explain some of the detail. If you look at private clouds and public clouds, I think the world accepts that hybrid is the destination, as Ginny laid out. But then we get into the details of winning the architecture. If we look at the piece in red, which is the OpenShift platform, OpenShift is the only one that runs across the public clouds, IBM, Amazon, Microsoft, Google, and by the way, many others that are not even on the page. Everybody's hybrid kind of connects their private to their public, and it kind of stops there. However, OpenShift gives us the ability to go across all the publics, many privates, and connect back to the traditional workloads. We believe this offers us unique advantage in the horizontal play that both Jim mentioned and Ginny mentioned. And that's an important foundation for what I'll touch on next. So if we look at our software capabilities from IBM, what we announced yesterday is the product family called Cloud Paks. It really is about making IBM software cloud native. It runs on OpenShift. That is the platform on which it runs. That means it can go wherever OpenShift goes. So Ginny mentioned middleware anywhere. So it can go across all the clouds that I just showed you OpenShift goes on, whether it's the IBM cloud, Azure, AWS, Google, private clouds, as well as traditional infrastructure. But a cloud-native software is a lot more than just containerizing something and putting it on top of OpenShift. It's about taking out a lot of the operational cost. Up to 75% of the operational cost goes away. If you want to go run it on a public cloud, say IBM's, single-click deploy, as opposed to hours or days of installation and configuration. Taking applications and giving you an 80% acceleration in taking them from development to production. Or the what I'll get into to give you a little bit more of a detail is how you can also make data scientists a lot more productive. So when you look at all of this, in addition to the Cloud Paks, we have certified 100 different IBM products on top of OpenShift. We have optimized the portfolio for Red Hat OpenShift. And we are going to give you consistent management across all those clouds. So not only do the Cloud Paks run everywhere, you also have a single console that gives you visibility and control into all these Cloud Pak environments wherever they happen to run. And we mentioned IBM Z coming in the fourth quarter, runs on all the other architectures today with Linux One on the mainframe coming in the fourth quarter. I think really, really key announcement. So if we take a deeper look at one of them, the Cloud Pak for data, we talked about that data is what is driving competitive advantage, and everyone wants to unlock more value. So what the Cloud Pak for Data does, it's a unique new build that gives you that acceleration on how do you collect, organize, and begin to ready up your data for AI. We know that collecting data is often 80% of the task and takes up 80% of the time and cost for an AI project. Massive acceleration. So you can keep your data where it is, on private or public, and this Cloud Pak allows you to connect to the data wherever it happens to be, and that gives you that 500% faster access to the data as opposed to having to move it in. We use AI inside in terms of building knowledge catalogs and understanding the metadata about the data, and that reduces the data prep time by 80%. We use a new technology called AutoAI to be able to figure out how do you do feature engineering and all the work the data scientists do to get ready for machine learning and deep learning, and that takes away 80% of the task that data scientists have to do, all of it resulting in a much faster time to value, and all of the Watson capabilities right on top of this platform, so they can now begin to go into both private data pools and public data pools and begin to access and unlock value for all of our clients. Then, touching on an end-to-end stack, we know that everybody worries about the regulatory concerns, data locality, all of the issues that anybody who runs mission-critical workloads has to do. The IBM Public Cloud is the one that is enterprise-proven. We have also rebuilt it on these technologies, such as Kubernetes and, of course, Linux. It's already used by more than 1,000 clients for just the Kubernetes function, and our public cloud manages over 16,000 production Kubernetes clusters today. It is secure and compliant, not just PCI and HIPAA, but we can talk about SOC 2, we can talk about FedRAMP. All of these are certifications that our cloud provides, and so many different forms of whether it's container-level security, isolation of workloads, bare metal support, etc. So enterprise-proven, secure, and compliant. We also have automated global resiliency, built-in load balancing and resilience across multiple zones across the globe, both to offer data locality, but to also give you full resiliency. And all the cloud packs we offer are preloaded and certified on the cloud and single-click deploy to be able to give you that ease of use and a much easier consumption form also for the cloud packs. By the way, that also gives you the right ones to run anywhere. Run the cloud pack on private, run it on IBM's public, go run it on some other public cloud, and that is the capability that unlocks both the productivity but also the innovation that Jim mentioned. But it's not enough to just talk about capabilities that people use in mission critical. We also believe that the cloud packs give us a much greater access to new workloads, and I'll touch on just two. So when we talked about cloud pack for data, right, great. Great access to the data, virtualizing, great access to how do you organize the data. But then as people begin to use machine learning in workflows and all the things that Mark Foster after me will talk about, we get access into that market, which is worth tens of billions. The other one, as 5G rolls out, network speeds increase by 10x or 100x. As that happens, all of the telecom providers around the world are going to put in software-defined networking capabilities where they're going from proprietary hardware boxes to much more software stacks that in turn run on Red Hat, OpenStack, and OpenShift, and that in turn begin to use cloud packs on how they deliver capability to enterprise clients, because with those speeds, it's not enough to go all the way back to an enterprise data center or a cloud data center. There is going to be so much more capability at the edge of the network that it allows us now to bring all these capabilities there and work with all these carriers to bring 5G to life for the enterprise. Another market that is going to be measured in the multiple billions and likely into the tens of billions in the near to medium term. And so many others that you can see on the page that we get access to through all this. So to wrap this part, we're making our software cloud native, and it goes across horizontally now all the other clouds. But there is a vertical piece to Ginny's point. All of the mission-critical workloads run on this middleware, so they can now move onto OpenShift and onto the cloud. We're going to drive a lot more Red Hat because of the way that we are optimizing all the capabilities onto Red Hat, and Mark is going to talk a bit more about that. And this whole strategy of going both horizontal and vertical allows us to go capture the new workloads. And with that, the cloud and cognitive software segment is going to accelerate to double-digit revenue growth in 2020, enhanced, of course, by Red Hat. So with that, let me introduce my colleague, Mark Foster. Mark?
Thanks, Arvind. Thank you. Well, Arvind's done a great job, I think, of talking about the opportunity that we can see for our software. I want to talk now about the huge opportunity we can see in the services space as well. Ginny did a nice job of describing our vision of this Chapter 2 change that our clients are going through. And this Chapter 2 change means we are actually on the cusp of a major new wave of marketplace for business and technology services. The sheer scale of the change that clients are going through as they start to build their new business models, as they start to have to apply all these exponential technologies we've seen to transform their workflows, the flowing through of that to then all the infrastructure that sits underneath it, the change in the people, the culture, the mindsets of the organizations. This all creates, you know, a massive need for services. There's a huge amount of complexity to be managed as well. And all of this means that clients are seeking a way to de-risk the journey of transformation that they're going on. They want to have the innovation, but they also want to arrive safely at their destination. And that creates, you know, a massive services opportunity. And within that services opportunity, Arvind's already talked about the piece that is connected to the hybrid multi-cloud. And, you know, we're very well positioned as IBM to play not only in that wider services opportunity, but also here, particularly as it relates to the hybrid multi-cloud space. And what Red Hat does for us is it actually accelerates and reinforces our opportunity to seize our space in these marketplaces. It does that because we're able to actually reinforce our role as the open, trusted journey partner for our clients as they go on their hybrid multi-cloud journey. We're able to reinforce the fact they can see that we can help them meet them wherever they currently are in terms of their cloud journey. We can help them then move across this world in a way that is also de-risked in terms of the openness of the environments that we're helping them to create. It gives us massive new permission to have conversations with our clients and to leverage the incumbency and scale and reach that we have, that Ginny talked about in terms of the scale of our services business and the relationships that we have. But it also allows us, as we start to build out unique cloud transformation capabilities and methods and approaches that will underpin our ability to bring Red Hat and IBM together in our clients to help them on their transformation. That too is a big opportunity for our services business. And Jim's already touched upon, and I'll talk about in a few moments, our ability through our incumbency, through the massive workloads that we have across our AMS and our strategic outsourcing business, to use that to fuel OpenShift and to help OpenShift as it scales to become more of a standard in the marketplace. And as that gets greater, then that also has a flywheel effect for our services as well. So all of this we see as a real way for us to really leverage this hybrid cloud moment and strengthen our position as the world's largest services leader. And we are the world's largest services organization. Under the umbrella of our combined GBS and GTS business, we're a 46,250,000 person services organization straddling business and technology change. Back to that picture I showed you at the start, our capacity to work right from the digital strategy end of things, helping our clients think about the way they're going to connect that outside-in piece still, thinking about experience and what that means across their business, our ability to apply all these exponential technologies to transform the workflows of our clients, our massive 80,000-person cloud application infrastructure capability that we have. And then through into our GTS capabilities around, you know, running very large parts of the world's core infrastructure in banking, in telco, in automotive, and many other industries. So you can see that we have, you know, a huge power here, a power of incumbency, but we also have, you know, deep skills across the world that we can leverage as well, and of course, you know, a massive range of relationships, trusted relationships, that we're going to be able to build upon as we move forward. So now, as we start to see how we can play and bring all this together with Red Hat, we can see a number of opportunities. One opportunity is our ability to actually play across the life cycle of this hybrid multi-cloud journey, helping our clients with the advice around where they're going to go on the journey, the roadmap they're going to have to follow, our ability to help them to move applications and infrastructure, to build new applications, and of course, to manage them. And this end-to-end ability to play right across the life cycle is something that we're really focused on. And what we've been doing over the past period is aligning our capabilities in this area with the offerings of Red Hat to make sure we can bring those two things together in a really powerful way. And of course, we're going to be building all that around the IBM Cloud Paks as well, as we think about how we leverage and wrap services around those propositions. But it's not only being able to play this across obviously the IBM end-to-end stack that's going to be powerful. It is true that we can play this entire model of advise, move, build and manage across all clouds. And our ability, again, to meet our clients wherever they are on that journey, and the skills that we have in other clouds that we can bring to bear as well. when we think about our tools and approaches, we've also been stepping those up and preparing for this moment in terms of creating our garage methodology. This is an end-to-end approach we have to help us co-create, co-execute, and cooperate with our clients across their entire cloud journey in a way that we innovate with them, we help them build capability in this important space, as well as helping them obviously achieve their new business platforms and transform their workflows. We've developed a unique application modernization roadmap. We know more about our clients' applications than anybody else. We know more about their infrastructure. But we're able to use this roadmap to help them to analyze that application starting point and help them to map how that's going to manage itself across the different opportunities and options that are out there. We've built a massive network of cloud migration factories that are already moving hundreds of thousands of workloads into the cloud. And we're leveraging and extending that entire network as we move forward. And my colleagues in Global Technology Services have created a multi-cloud management platform, which is going to underpin the way that we manage and help to orchestrate all this change across our clients. So we have, you know, a huge capability here, and we're building more and more. We have the world's largest Red Hat consulting skill set. We're certifying more people all the time. We're building upon the fact that we already, in fact, run and operate many Red Hat environments around the world. And as I say, we've now aligned ourselves completely with the Red Hat offering strategy to make sure that we're truly able to bring a combined offering to market in a powerful way. We do have a chance to also take this incumbency that we have, the fact that we are operating so many mission-critical workloads in our application management world and our strategic outsourcing world, and use that to fuel the growth of OpenShift as we help to manage and move and containerize the old and new applications we see across our clients' environments. We're, of course, massively going to be driving this by making OpenShift the default that we use as we build the cloud-native applications for all of our clients. And, of course, that the power of our network, the power of our incumbency, the relationships that we have, and the ability that brings to us to accelerate OpenShift is a massive opportunity. And what that then means, of course, as a reinforcing opportunity for services just follows on from that. And Arvind talked about some of these other workloads. So I've talked about the fact that we can see a really big opportunity in the hybrid multi-cloud services space in its own right. But as we start to see the opportunity for that environment to run these different new workloads, the 5G, the IoT, the AI, that also expands and increases our ability to play in the business transformation space. The workflows that these new technologies are going to transform, we have the opportunity to work with our clients around that end of the transformation too. So the opportunity for services is not simply a technology services transformation opportunity, it's a business services transformation opportunity powered by this new capability. And so as we think about, you know, the opportunity in front of us, clearly the way that this helps us to become truly the trusted partner for our clients as they go on their open hybrid multi-cloud journey is a really big opportunity in its own right. We feel we have, you know, the scale, we have the breadth, the reach of capabilities across this unique services organization to allow us to seize that opportunity and to leverage this new relationship. We're building some unique assets to underpin it, and we're very confident they're going to help us again to accelerate our role and drive growth in our business. And we too can play our part in helping OpenShift to become a standard. And all of this will lead to continued progress in our transformation of our services business. We've already seen the return to growth in our GBS business. And this capability is going to help us as we start to move GTS on its inflection point forward as well and drive growth and revenue, margin growth and revenue growth in services overall moving forward. And with that, I'd hand over to Martin to talk about the broader growth opportunity for IBM.
Thank you, Mark. Thank you very much. And let me add my thanks for your time today. I wanted to go a little bit deeper on a particular aspect of what we've been talking about today, and that is accelerating Red Hat. But I want to go into the how. How is this going to work in practice? How do we put the 27,000 IBM sellers and our 80,000 business partners out into the field to talk about Red Hat and to get them enabled and energized. That, by the way, is in addition to what Mark already identified as the biggest services practice in the world, 250,000 practitioners. And again, we have 3,000 Red Hat sellers and 11,000 Red Hat business partners. So I want to build out, as I said, I want to build out on the how we do that. I want to start, though, with a pretty clear set of principles by which we're operating. And first and foremost, we recognize and we know how important it is that Red Hat maintains its independence and how important it is that Red Hat maintains its neutrality, not only for its ecosystem, but for how it's engaging with its client base. So our goal here is to maintain their independence, but at the same time, leverage our presence and leverage our incumbency in order to deliver the client value that all of my colleagues have talked a bit about. So from a principal perspective, number one, first on the list, preserve Red Hat's operating model independence. So again, we've talked about their independence, but it really comes down to how do we operate. So Red Hat will keep its own sales force. It will remain focused on selling Red Hat, and they'll have an independent management system, and they'll keep their compensation plans and how they incent their sellers. Very important. Secondly, we will maintain, and Red Hat will maintain, the approach of having a being neutral in their ecosystem. So obviously Red Hat's going to work with IBM, but it's going to work freely with all of our competitors as well, whether that's at a deal level, whether that's at a relationship level. But Red Hat will maintain its neutrality within the ecosystem when partners bring deals to Red Hat, when Red Hat brings our competitors into their deals, if that's the most appropriate. Preserving that ecosystem is top of mind for us, and it will also keep, as Jim noted, keep that innovation flowing for our client base. And third, of course, we're going to focus on geographic expansion. Ginny noted this earlier. We are in, you know, many, many more countries than Red Hat is. We have a much, much bigger scale. So we have activated our teams. We have activated our business partner network in order to bring the scale that we have to helping accelerate Red Hat. So let me go into a little bit more on the how. If we start to talk about really three discrete client segments here. First, where we have substantial relationships with our clients. Obviously, Red Hat has some substantial relationships with certain clients. We've done all the mapping now. We know who those clients are. I'm going to talk more about how we grow that. Secondly, there are about 30 countries where Red Hat has a presence, but it's not scaled to the extent our presence is scaled. So we see an enormous opportunity. Again, we've done all the mapping. I'm going to talk a little bit about that and put a little bit of math around that. And then obviously there is a big part of the world where we operate, we have presence, and yet Red Hat doesn't. They have minimal presence in some of these. So I'll go into a little bit more detail on each of these. But if I generalized what we're hearing so far from clients in our first few weeks, there is a lot more confidence from our clients on investing in and pursuing the platform of Red Hat and open source because of the IBM Red Hat together. They have a lot more confidence in moving the mission-critical workloads that Ginny noted and my other colleagues have noted about what Chapter 2 is all about. There is a lot more confidence now in moving those mission-critical workloads. And importantly, in our early discussions, and I'm going to try to contextualize this at the end, there is a lot more opportunity identified and opportunity for growth, even again in our early discussion. So let me start with our largest accounts. So this is a simplified set of math, but when we do the mapping, where we have a substantial relationship with our clients, there are about 1,100 clients where we have what I'd call a substantial relationship. The overlap between Red Hat's substantial relationship is only about 60 of those clients have what I would call a substantial Red Hat relationship. And when you translate, and substantial means, you know, the number of servers on which Red Hat Enterprise Linux or OpenShift sits already. So translate all of that, kind of distill that down to a revenue number. It's about a $20 million on average spend with our clients, Red Hat's clients, with Red Hat. Again, ours is a bigger relationship. If all we did was move and bring Red Hat into about 10 points of that, we expanded that, we would have a substantial opportunity. We did the math on 5% only, but if we did 10, so it's a big number. If we did 5%, we would say if we can get the Red Hat opportunity into another 5 points that similar to where the way Red Hat operates with its biggest clients, that's already $1 billion. Now, again, the math is simplified, and what this doesn't recognize is the difference between what the mix of business Red Hat has today with Red Hat Enterprise Linux and the value of a client and the much deeper relationship that OpenShift represents. So again, we haven't changed any of that. It is a simplified example, but there is substantial opportunity for us to bring Red Hat into our largest clients where we have built up trust, where we have services practitioners to bring that Red Hat platform into these large clients. Let me go to the next category. So there are, as I said, about 30 countries that Red Hat has a presence in, but it's not the extent of the presence we have. We have, in these countries, we have 6,000 sellers. We have 100,000 service delivery professionals that we can rely on. And there is minimal overlap between the client bases. And we put the data on the graphic that you can see. So out of our a little bit more than 5,200 existing clients, Red Hat has about 2,200, but only about, again, 800 of those. And what's not present is a substantial OpenShift presence. 98% of these clients don't yet have OpenShift. 90% of them don't have a significant Red Hat Enterprise Linux, a significant RHEL presence. So for every 10 points of this client base that we can bring into and have Red Hat expand to where what it sees when it does have a more substantial relationship, again, another 150 million per 10 points. So again, we bring 6,000 sellers, we bring our services professionals, we bring 27,000 or so business partners in these countries. So again, just our ability to scale quickly is a substantial acceleration to the Red Hat business. On top of all that, obviously, you know, we have a very specific industry set of solutions. And so when we bring our industry teams in with our industry platform teams, we have a pretty sophisticated set of reference architectures that our clients are really kind of chomping at the bit to get a hold of. So big clients, substantial opportunity, countries where Red Hat has a limited presence and we have a substantial present, pretty substantial opportunity. And then we kind of netted it off for all the other countries. You know, in all the other countries, we can bring in the Red Hat teams. We can bring in scale. We can bring in the human component that's required to scale quickly. And in this group, in this category, again, minimal overlap with the client base. For every 10 points, again, that of our client base that we can bring Red Hat into with our capabilities, it would add another 500 million or so of opportunity. And again, we've spent time in the last 3 weeks with training our sales force, with training our business partners, and obviously building out not only the technology solutions, but bringing our IBM Global Financing business into this in support of Red Hat's products and services. So a very substantial set of effort and work behind what I would say is the how do we accelerate Red Hat given our presence. Let me just wrap up with, bringing this down to a kind of a contextualized example. A major auto manufacturer, we have a big presence. Red Hat has a big presence. We run today all of their IT. We run their financing applications. We run their connected mobility. So you can imagine what a substantial relationship we have with this client. Red Hat also has a substantial relationship with this client. They have they're running RHEL, they have JBoss, they have OpenShift containers, so pretty substantial client on both sides. The team sat down very quickly in the beginning and started to identify some new opportunities. And the nature of those is really, in this particular example, but I think it's indicative, threefold. One, there is a substantial opportunity to shift much more dramatically into RHEL and OpenShift in order to reduce their infrastructure costs. So that frees up cash for them and investment for them to go pursue some of the other opportunities, such as a new connected car platform, which now they're very excited about because, again, we can build that with Red Hat on Linux, on OpenShift, and it gives them an opportunity to deploy that much more simply. And obviously, that's an example of how we speed the development process for them. So they saw also an opportunity where additional, yes, they were using open source, but additional OpenShift opportunities so they can speed up their own development applications. So some efficiency with some reinvestment is sort of typical of how we've talked about a lot of the things we do, but we can see that even in these clients where we have already substantial relationships with Red Hat and IBM. The CIO, after this session, the CIO said, I feel more confident than ever in bringing a connected platform now that IBM and Red Hat have come together and are going to help us do this. And again, I think that's indicative. So plenty of opportunity. I hope that's given you a little sense of the what and the how of how we're going to accelerate Red Hat. And now with that, I'd like to introduce my colleague, the one you've been waiting for. I'd like to introduce my colleague, our CFO, Jim Kavanaugh.
Thank you, Martin. I appreciate it. And good afternoon, everyone here today. As you can tell from all the presenters here today, we are extremely excited about bringing IBM and Red Hat together. Ginny kicked it off here today, and my colleagues finished with regards to talking about the power of IBM plus Red Hat and how we are better together. Better to capitalize on the shift on where we believe the evolution of the cloud is going, and that is Chapter 2, hybrid multi-cloud. And as our clients embark on their digital reinvention and journeys to cloud, why will we win? Well, Jim did a great job talking about the value of what Red Hat brings to the equation, and that is an open source technology hybrid multi-cloud platform. And you couple that with the value of what IBM brings, which is innovative technology, deep industry expertise, and our trust and client relationships, and it creates an unparalleled combination to lead in the next evolution of hybrid multi-cloud. Now, why am I excited about it? Well, one, Arvind kind of touched on it and Mark built on it, and that is it's a $1.2 trillion market opportunity in the hybrid cloud marketplace. And that is growing mid-teens throughout 2022. But more importantly, it has high-value, attractive profit pools. And that's driven based on the next evolution of cloud being driven by hybrid software, high-value services overall. And how does that play to our financial model then? Well, we talked about already. Ginny kicked it off. Red Hat plus IBM accelerates IBM's revenue growth 200-plus basis points over the next 5 years. It accelerates our shift to higher value, operating gross profit margin accretion in year one, operating EPS accretion in year two, and it enhances our strong free cash flow profile. Free cash flow accretive in the first 12 months, and enabling our continued dividend growth policy. So let me put this in perspective about what this means to IBM overall when you bring Red Hat and IBM together, and we're going to drive this over the next couple years, the midterm, as Ginny talked about, 2020 and 2021. And let's start with revenue overall, because from our overall financial model, Red Hat plus IBM will accelerate our revenue growth, our operating pre-tax income, and our free cash flow. Around revenue growth, Ginny talked sustained revenue growth trajectory. This combination puts IBM on that path starting in 2020. And with that, we are raising our revenue model in the near term to mid-single digits. And you're going to see that most pronounced in our cloud and cognitive software segment, where we just came off of a very strong second quarter led by our differentiated offerings and value proposition around hybrid cloud software and security. We will see a marked inflection as we go into 2020 with the addition of Red Hat, and that segment will grow double digits. In addition, our services portfolio, and Mark did a great job outlining about how we feel very strongly that we are going to be the provider of choice as our clients embark on their digital reinvention and journey to cloud. the offering redesign that we've done around advise, build, move, and manage positions our services business on an improving revenue growth profile while continuing to drive the operating leverage and margin expansion in that business. That will enable us to continue down our high-value path, expanding gross margins, driving that operating leverage, which gives us the confidence to raise our operating pre-tax margin and income to high single digits in 2020 and 2021, which will then generate very strong free cash flow, over 100% realization. And that realization is after the incremental interest expense and acquisition-related charges that I'll get into later. And you see on the bottom right of this chart that with the addition of Red Hat, Red Hat will generate $1.5 billion of free cash flow by the end of 2021. All while, as you would expect, we will prudently manage our balance sheet, driving the financial discipline and focusing on paying down our debt and getting back to our targeted leverage ratios to mid to high single A within a couple years. So I'm not going to do justice to Red Hat overall, but I wanted to talk about Jim did a phenomenal job laying out the strategic rationale, the business model, the offering and value proposition around that open source technology hybrid multi-cloud platform, that secret sauce of that horizontal architecture and why it brings distinct value to IBM, to our clients, and to our investors when you couple it with the value of IBM. But I'll tell you what I'm most excited about is Red Hat has a very high value, high growth, extremely attractive financial model. As you can see on the chart, strong revenue growth profile, consistently growing mid-teens, with a subscription-based business model, a high value subscription-based business model that drives annuity, high annuity content, and very high renewal rates over time. Strong operating leverage, 24 points of operating margin, 85 plus points of gross margin, which enables a very strong cash engine overall. And on an annualized basis, over $1 billion of free cash flow generation growing in the mid-teens. So now with that profile, let's talk about with the acquisition of Red Hat and combining it with IBM, what is Red Hat's incremental contribution to the IBM company over the next couple years? And I'm going to talk about it, laying out the data first on a revenue profile, then I'll get into free cash flow, and then we'll wrap it up with earnings per share. But as you could see, Red Hat accelerates IBM's revenue growth by 200 plus basis points over 5 years. And as Ginny outlined the agenda and talked at length here today, it's really driven by three pillars. The first, the addition of Red Hat's base standalone business. The base plus its growth profile, which I said already is growing in the mid-teens. The second is the acceleration of Red Hat when you combine IBM's scale and incumbency in what we bring to the equation. And third is the cross-sell opportunities that we have to sell more IBM product, software, and services capability. Now that 2 points of revenue growth over a 5-year CGR, that's a long-term statement. As you can see on the chart, we actually expect a faster acceleration over the next couple years. And in 2020, you see with the combination of Red Hat and IBM, we will grow revenue 4 to 5 points incrementally. And in 2021, another 2 to 3 points. And breaking it down into those individual pillars, when you look first, as Jim and Martin has talked about, the combination of Red Hat standalone business and sell more Red Hat through our breadth and reach of client relationships, Red Hat will contribute 3 to 4 points of growth in 2020 and about 2 points of growth in 2021. And as Arvind and Mark just talked about, when you look at 2020 and 2021, we will get acceleration of about a point of growth in selling more IBM. That's our product, our software, and our services overall. And while you look at this, everything I'm talking about really relates back to our client's journey to the cloud. So this will have a marked inflection on our overall cloud trajectory, our growth, and our cloud penetration in our portfolio. And as you can see, over a five-year CGR, this contributes 800 basis points of cloud revenue growth over those 5 years. Now let's turn to free cash flow. We acquired a great company with an extremely attractive free cash flow profile. As I said already, on an annualized basis, generating over $1 billion of free cash flow going forward. And when you take a look at both that free cash flow generation of the standalone and you add to it the incremental IBM cross-sell opportunities, Red Hat not only pays for the incremental interest expense, it also is free cash flow accretive in the first 12 months. And as you can see on this chart, by 2021, we will generate $1.5 billion of free cash flow overall. And because of that, we feel confident to reaffirm our 2019 free cash flow guidance of about $12 billion overall. So now with that said, let's turn to operating EPS. Now I just went through the combination of Red Hat and IBM brought together accelerates our revenue growth profile, and it accelerates and enhances our free cash flow engine to be accretive in the first 12 months. But there are, in the near term, some non-cash purchase accounting entries that will temporarily be dilutive to IBM's near-term EPS. In fact, as you can see on the chart, over 100% of that near-term EPS dilution over the next 18 months are driven by non-cash items, the largest being deferred revenue adjustment, which I'll get into shortly. But as you can see, that dilution, which again is non-cash, gets lessened over time, and it contributes immediately to IBM's earnings per share growth in 2020 and quickly becomes accretive by the end of 2021. So let's take a step back now, because as I've spent a lot of time with our investors and many of our analysts out there, we've been going through this concept of purchase accounting. And I wanted to take a minute to explain with all the numbers, so we're extremely transparent, what the non-cash purchase accounting of deferred revenue means with this acquisition. So when you take a look at it, publicly disclosed data, at the time of closing, Red Hat's deferred revenue was $2.8 billion. Now, I will tell you, $2.8 billion of deferred revenue, why do you create deferred revenue? Well, it gets right back to what Jim had said earlier. The strategic value, the high-value subscription-based model where clients pay in advance for licenses creates that deferred revenue-based balance. And when you take a look at it, U.S. GAAP requires, upon acquisition, an acquirer needs to value the entire balance sheet, including deferred revenue, at what's called fair value. That is a standard valuation methodology, and it's validated by an independent third party. And basically, at its core, fair value requires a company to estimate the cost to deliver the future performance obligation of that deferred revenue, and it allows you to put a reasonable margin on top of that cost. The industry average is about 10 to 20%. We assume 15% here. And because Red Hat is a high-value-based business, it has a low cost of deliver going forward in the mid-teens. So that results in a $2.2 billion deferred revenue non-cash purchase accounting adjustment, or about 80% in the near term, which then leaves, at fair value, about $600 million worth of revenue that will be recognized over time. But I will tell you, Red Hat has a very stable client base and an extremely high renewal rate. And we expect that revenue to be replenished in the future as those contracts renew. That accelerates our growth over time. So when you take into account those non-cash purchase accounting impacts, we are updating our 2019 operating earnings per share. And let me walk through methodically the bridge so you understand what some of these drivers are. And you get underneath the strategic value and where this business is going and why we have confidence in 2020 and 2021 to take up both our revenue and our operating pre-tax margin model going forward. So as you all know, our previous guidance started at least 1390. We just announced our second quarter, a solid second quarter about 10 days ago. And in that quarter, you saw the fundamentals of our business play out with growth in key high-value areas around cloud, around data and AI, around digital, and around security. And that played out across our cloud and cognitive segment and in our continued momentum in GBS. In addition to that growth in key high-value areas, you saw a very strong operating leverage quarter. We grew our gross margins the strongest in over 5 years by 100 basis points. And we beat our own internal expectations that we guided to by 10 cents, and we're going to roll that 10 cents through to the year. Turning then to the Red Hat standalone business, combined with the incremental cross-sell opportunity, that business is a high value, high margin, and it will be accretive by about 40 cents in the second half, as you see there on the chart. But given we had to go to the debt markets to fund a portion of this acquisition, we will incur incremental interest expense in the second half. And that roughly offsets the accretive value of that Red Hat standalone business over the first 6 months. But I'll tell you, those dynamics change over time. As we continue to accelerate and drive the value of IBM and Red Hat together, that business continues to grow, and we are going to prudently manage our balance sheet to pay down that debt so the interest expense over time will be reduced, and you'll see continued accretion, which is why we're confident in saying operating EPS will be accretive by the end of year two. So with that now, that turns into about $1.20 of dilutive impact in the second half of 19. And as you can see on the chart, it's entirely due to transaction-related, non-cash-related items. The first and largest being what I just went through, which is the deferred revenue adjustment, which will impact us in the second half by 85 cents overall for that 80% deferred revenue adjustment haircut that we're going to have to take. In addition, we have 25 cents more dilution due to just the stock option amortization of Red Hat's equity and also, and I think very prudently, retention that we built in here to make sure that we get off on a fast start and drive the value of IBMers and Red Hatters together as we move forward. And then finally, as you know, we closed the Red Hat acquisition earlier than expected, which we are very pleased with overall. But with that, prudently, we suspended our share repurchase program earlier than expected. So our absolute share count exiting 2019 will be higher than what we previously talked about. We think that is prudent as we continue to focus on driving a healthy balance sheet and a strong investment-grade rating, and continue to drive the debt down over time to get back to those targeted leverage ratios by a couple years. So as you can see on the bottom part of the chart, the core operational sustainable business moving forward, a healthy foundation of IBM's base where we're rolling through increases in 2019, couple that with a standalone, high-value, high-growth Red Hat-based business, we get strong accretion. The dilution effect of this non-cash purchase accounting will impact us in the first 6 months, but it allows us the confidence to reaffirm our free cash flow guidance of about $12 billion on the bottom of the chart. So with that, let me turn, because I know it's very many of you are very interested, into our balance sheet and our debt profile. You know, we drive a very disciplined financial management system here. And as I just talked about, with the combination of IBM at a very strong free cash flow generator and then bringing in an extremely attractive free cash flow generator of Red Hat, we drive about $12 billion of free cash flow on an annual basis. That will continue to accelerate as we move forward, with Red Hat being free cash flow accretive in the first 12 months and adding about $1.5 billion of free cash flow by the end of 2021. You take that cash and combine it with the portfolio actions that we've been doing since we announced this acquisition on October 28th of last year, and that is portfolio actions around divesting some of our software, select assets, our mortgage processing business to create financial flexibility, in addition to the actions and decisions consciously we're making around leveraging our balance sheet for high value as we exit low-value third-party OEM content in our GTS business and in our IGF OEM commercial financing business, we feel comfortable, as you can see on the chart, that we will get back to our targeted leverage ratios within a couple years overall. And that enables us to have enough financial flexibility over this time period to continue to invest in our business and to also return value to our shareholders by being committed to a dividend growth policy overall. So with that, let me just conclude on behalf of all of us before we get into the Q&A. As you can tell, we couldn't be more excited about the power of bringing IBM and Red Hat together and about the opportunity that is in front of us as we continue to enable value for our clients and value for our shareholders as we move forward. The power of these two companies coming together at a time where we have tremendous market opportunity to go capitalize on and enabling our clients' journey in Chapter 2, we are going to be able to accelerate IBM's revenue growth to a sustained revenue growth trajectory. We're going to continue driving margin expansion, taking up our operating pre-tax income model to high single digit, continue to run strong free cash flow generation, and have the flexibility to get back to our targeted leverage ratio here, and we could not be more excited. So with that, I'd like to thank you for your time. I'm going to ask Patricia to come back up here as we assemble chairs up here on the stage, and we'll get into the Q&A session right now. So thank you very much.
Okay. While we gather up here, just a couple of points. First of all, as I said at the beginning of the webcast, if you look at the top right corner of your screen there, you'll see Ask a Question. We already have a number of questions that have come in, so thank you for those, but you can still submit questions. There are also a few questions in here that are clarifications on, for example, 2019. At the conclusion of this webcast, we're going to post an article to our investor website that provides a little more detail on what Jim talked about and a little more detail on the second half dynamics. And so a lot of the questions that I'm seeing coming through here, we are going to address in that investor article. And so I'm not going to cover those here. I'll cover some of the more strategic questions. Okay, so a number of questions. I want to start with one that I think is just a really good broad question. I think we addressed some of it, but why should I as a client select hybrid cloud over public cloud?
Okay, well, why don't I start, and then I'm going to let Jim and Arvind, I think, jump right in on this. You know, as I say, for many clients, what you want is to have innovation wherever innovation lives. And if you think it will be only on one place forever, that's also not a good choice. So that's one good reason. You want to have the freedom to have innovation anywhere it is. That's hybrid cloud. The second thing, though, is many clients we deal with, they weren't just born last night. So they have an existing home. They're going to renovate it. This gives them complete freedom on both from a cost perspective, from a type of product they want to move to, the pace, the cost, and the innovation, how to do it, whether to go a room at a time, do a whole floor at a time, whether to bring something in from the outside. And so the reality of modernization and then the ability to have forever access to wherever the best innovation is why it's very clear to, I think, our clients that hybrid cloud is going to be the destination. So would Jim and Arvind, you want to jump in?
Well, I'm very passionate on this because we've seen the power of a horizontal platform with Linux driving a lot more innovation. And that's certainly going to be true with the cloud. As Jenny said, innovation is happening often on the cloud. So let's say you've built an application to serve your customer on Amazon, and now Google comes out with a new genomic sequencing kind of algorithm that you want to use on that. Well, how are you going to get to that? Because the data has gravity, and so now you need the application to run there, but you can't because you've already built it to be in the wrong place. We see clients having that issue today. Or, you know, you have data that you need to keep in your data center because it's, you know, PCI compliant, yet you want to burst out onto a cloud to do searching. So almost certainly enterprises are going to have to use multiple clouds, and versus getting stuck in vertical stovepipes and the how brittle that is. I mean, that's the world that everybody's trying to move away from. And so there's just so much value in being able to say I can write once and run anywhere and therefore avail myself of new sources of functionality wherever they are in the future is critical just to having the flexibility to be able to innovate going forward.
I think Ginny and Jim answered it. Look, hybrid includes public. So it's not a or, it's an and. And however, hybrid avoids a monocloud culture.
Okay, good. Let me go take one here. When workloads move from on-prem to the public cloud, they get rewritten, updated, refactored. Why use RHEL and not Ubuntu or AWS's Linux that is free?
Okay.
Sure. Why don't I answer
you
that?
Because
I
all
do
the
this
time.
All the time. Yeah. Well, so two things. And, you know, first off, those, especially Ubuntu and but Amazon as well, those are what we call compile and ship Linuxes, and they are great, and they have a lot of value for a lot of people. But if you're running a production workload, one of the things that you expect is that if there's a security vulnerability or a bug, that's going to get patched and your application will still run. There's only one Linux that commits to, we call it binary compatibility, so saying we will continue to update the operating system without breaking your application, and that's Red Hat Enterprise Linux, and that's why we have a whole bow wave of engineering that goes into that. So when you're running a production workload, you need to make sure that it's going to be able to run going forward. And Red Hat is the only company that has the engineering capability and the explicit commitment to doing that. Number two, unless you're going to literally move everything to one cloud, every enterprise has what they call an SOE. So they're basically a standard operating environment where you build internal capability. So if a production application goes down, you can have a staff who can help you fix that. And those are generally dozens of people, and you build skills over time around that SOE. So virtually every large enterprise, that SOE is built around Linux, Red Hat Enterprise Linux for Linux workloads. Building a second SOE just to get a free version of Linux is, well, there's risk associated with it, but it rarely ever pays for itself to have two or three different groups running different SOEs just to get a free Linux. So you really don't see that. Large enterprises just move and run Red Hat Linux on the cloud because you know you have the committed lifecycle and your current skills that you have will continue to work there as well.
Pat, I want to add something because I think it's actually quite critical. The one word we should focus on here is security, because one of the things, and we haven't perhaps talked enough about this, Jim's talking just the operating system, but part of what we announced today, and as I say, what Red Hat does is it does make safe for the enterprise the last mile here. Because for clients, yes, cost is one part, but you don't have to look far to find some of the security vulnerabilities that have been reported in the news, and they came from using uncertified open source. So not only do we certify, and Jim talked about RHEL, what Arvind announced today, these are completely certified for security stacks end-to-end. That will end up being one of the greatest determinants for an enterprise. And not only then do we do it for ours and Jim doing it there, I know when Jim and I had talked about the acquisition, one of the things Red Hat would like to do is certify more and more things end to end. And so that will be able to build the portfolio of what also goes on, you know, from just Red Hat alone, that is greater certification end to end. So this certifying for the last mile is A, a security statement, and B, it's that you keep revision and you keep all the past versions around. That's the world an enterprise lives in. They don't get to take one, throw it away, oh, another one next month, I better quick get to it. So that's why when I said we've had this great burst of conversations as an example, just one example, Martin used the auto company, but in telecommunication companies, in their networks, it's these characteristics is what they're all on fire about, all of us in a good way, about right now, that what we can do together on scale for a duration. It's like you build a building and put capital in, it's got to last.
Okay. Next question, what are the one or two areas where you see the most near-term revenue synergies?
Martin, you want to jump in?
Yeah, I mean, look, our ability to scale Red Hat in the near term. And remember, we talked about three elements of scaling Red Hat, selling more IBM software, selling more services. But the scaling Red Hat quickly is, I think, the one that's right in front of us. The discussion we've had with our clients so far, again, we're only 3 weeks in, and I gave you an example. The discussions are, there are hundreds and hundreds so far, and they're going to turn into thousands and thousands very quickly. And the opportunities that we're starting to see coming out of those, as I indicated, are varied, but they do represent substantial growth. So near term, scaling Red Hat and getting Red Hat into more into our big clients, more into the countries where we have scale, and in the countries where Red Hat is not, through both our own efforts as well as the ecosystem. And while we spent a lot of time, and I mentioned briefly how much training we've done with our own sales force, there is a massive ecosystem that we bring that can also help. So the first one, the one that's right in front of us, is scaling Red Hat faster.
Jim, you want to give a client reaction?
Yeah, this is one just observation that I said I was much more optimistic today than I was even when we closed. It's not just that IBM brings number of people and countries in depth. It brings credibility. So Red Hat's very proud of our software. We run nuclear submarines and stock exchanges. But when you hear about massive technology failures, it's rarely that there was a bug in the software. It's how it's configured and how it's operated. So when enterprises buy software from Red Hat, they have to run it. And so, you know, when you start talking about these big network opportunities or these large mission critical opportunities, we feel very good our software can do it. But for an enterprise, they have to believe they have a partner who can help them over the next decade run it at scale in a mission critical way. And so what's been most exciting to me is our really large customers are willing to take much bigger bets on our software stack because they believe they have IBM behind them to help them be able to run that at scale. And so that's what in the first few weeks to me is it's not just the breadth that IBM brings, it's the credibility and mission-critical workloads at really big scale.
Okay, that's a good lead into the next question. For mission-critical apps, are customers at a point where they're actually comfortable moving them to the public cloud? How important will private cloud be as an in-between step for modernizing apps without giving up control?
Okay, I love this one. I'll answer it, but I'm going to let Arvin do it. So go ahead, Arvin and Mark both, because they're both in process of this big way.
Look, over the last 2 years, I think most customers have come to the realization that private and public are going to coexist. So it's not a question that private is only a way stop on the journey to public. They both coexist. The issue is, do you write once for your traditional, once for your private, once for your public? And as Jim talked about, what with OpenShift and with what we're doing on Cloud Paks, you now get away that you can write it once and then choose where you run it. So you could choose to run a portion on public, a portion on private, and we believe that both of those are going to coexist for the next decades, at least in industries where you either care about your client data, you care about regulatory, you care about security, you care about data locality. And that's pretty much been the conversation that I must have had personally with over 100 clients over the last 9 months since we announced this acquisition.
Yeah, and I'd say most of the clients we're talking to have already got five or six clouds, which are a mixture of private and public clouds. And we're engaging through things like our application modernization roadmap with helping them think through exactly what is the right idea, how I take my current application suite, what's the best answer for it in terms of the kind of cloud it needs to sit upon, and then also having that kind of flexibility that actually even the choice I make around that is not locking me in. And the ability for that, for using OpenShift as a tool to actually de-risk those choices is also a powerful thing. So we're going to see people making the right sort of fit-for-purpose choices around the clouds they utilize, and that's a massively powerful tool.
Okay, Mark, here's another one for you. Does IBM have all the assets on the services side in-house, or do we think there's a need to add, hire, acquire more assets on software or services or consulting to convert the hybrid vision to reality?
Well, Mark would always like to spend more of my money.
I would, exactly.
Please, don't
exactly,
have an investor
exactly,
ask.
Exactly.
Go ahead, Mark.
Well, certainly, obviously, you can see from my comments and that we've obviously got a very deep repository of capability, but we're not standing still. I mean, we're engaging and have been engaging in massive training, reskilling of our teams across GBS and GTS to prepare for this moment, but to prepare for the broader hybrid multi-cloud world for some time. Of course, this is an expanding ecosystem. There are going to be new skills we need to acquire all the time. We want to grow our scale in certain geographies. We're going to need to continue to make sure we are open to all approaches to raising the scale of the organization, because we do think that clients are going to need access to skills, and therefore we're going to have to be a place where they can find those skills at scale.
Yeah. This skill point, I just want to go back to our clients. This skill issue is their number one issue, any of you that talk to a client. And so the idea that we can have a platform that's horizontal where they don't have to build islands of skills either is very powerful to them, since it's their number one inhibitor. Now, also for our services teams, that means we are making Red Hat the default development platform for them. So we can also help make a market, as Jim talked about with OpenShift, but it also helps us on the skill side as well.
Okay. Here's an interesting one. What are the two biggest cultural attributes you see in the other company that you hope to scale through your own organization? For example, what part of Red Hat culture do you want to ingest into IBM, and what part of the IBM culture do you want to ingest into Red Hat?
You want to go first? Go ahead.
Sure.
Start first.
Yeah, so Red Hat is, I love our culture. I've been very involved in it, and I've helped build it. And so we love what we do, and we have this great capability to innovate, which is phenomenal. The thing that I've come, even in the last few weeks, to appreciate about IBM is its ability to identify areas to standardize and drive out, kind of in a broad scale. And so, I take a pithy one. We don't need to innovate in every country on our accounts payable process. And so being able to learn from IBM on how to think about scaling out and standardize in areas where it makes the most sense, I would say, is number one that I find really, really, really fascinating. Number two, and this is one that I've been working on, I think we can really accelerate this with IBM. It's, Red Hat, because we are an open source company, we start open source project out, and we have a tendency to want to go into our clients and say, hey, let us show you the really cool technology here and why you should use it. And augmenting that with a client in view of, let's understand your problems and what you're trying to do, and then let's talk about how this fits together. IBM's been doing this for over 100 years. I had one really big client of ours I was talking to earlier this week who said exactly that. They said, look, we really want Red Hat to be a strategic partner of ours because we really like the technology and where you're going. And I know you're separate, but if you could learn from IBM, they've been a partner of ours for 40 years. They know how to listen. They know what it means to be a multi-decade partner, and you can learn a lot from them. And so that would be the second one that I would say I'm really looking forward to, how we best augment what we do and our passion for open source with a keen desire to serve our customers every day.
Look, I think one of the great, I'll talk about the IBM culture, and one of the things Jim and I often talked about during this process, it is no doubt when a client works with Red Hat, it's very experiential. They go in, they build things together. That is how you actually experience the product. And so we've been working very much on that journey. Mark just kind of casually mentioned garages as an example, because everybody out there says they co-create with a client. These are different, and they're, what are we up to now? 50, 60, 75, I can't remember.
Yeah, about 75 now,
roughly. Okay, 75, these big garages around the world. And some, by the way, others are inside of a client where they're big enough. AT&T has their own garage, so to speak. And what this does is co-create, which every consultant will say, but it's at scale. Because today, you've heard me say this, there's these random digital islands all over the place, random experimentation on digital everywhere that doesn't scale. And so in these garages, this experiential idea, which is that you together with a client, you co-create, but from the beginning, it can scale at enterprise strength and enterprise scale. So I say we've been doing that, but we could do this on a far larger scale. This idea of it's very technical, bottoms up with a client. in addition to strategic and, as you said, client in from the application side. So that experiential build it with them, you will see IBM do and learn from Red Hat and do far more on scale.
Okay, very good. How do you ensure Red Hat's channel partners are protected as IBM ramps its services arm for Red Hat?
Well, Jim's going to talk, but we need all of those partners out there, those SIs putting in not only Red Hat, our own software portfolios and cloud as an example. So we, too, are ramping up our support of all the other SIs. I love my own, too, but all the others that are out there. So, Jim, why don't you...
I'll say a few words. This is an area where we are already learning a lot from IBM, in that as we were talking about planning for how we'd work together in the field, because IBM has always had separate units that, you know, can often have, partners who are also competitors, how they think about, well, you can't actually show this data, this needs to stay separate, you know, how do you do an opportunity where you can lock in with a partner? So they have very sophisticated ways of thinking about how to do it that we've learned from and we've built into the process. So if a partner owns something, a partner continues to own it. And, you know, not even sharing visibility into opportunities if a partner's involved across the organization on the off chance that it might leak into a different partner ecosystem. And I've been really impressed at how sophisticated IBM's kind of knowledge and systems are to think about how to do that. So I feel very, very confident that we've adopted that in a way that I think our partners, because they're used to it, I think feel pretty confident in that as well.
Well, you've talked to all of them. I've talked to many of them, and they feel very confident in the way that we handle that. We were born that way. Our software had to run on other things. Services had to run and do and integrate everyone else's products. I think everyone's forgotten about that we actually know how to do that, as you said,
really well.
Quite well.
Boy, that's perfect lead into the next question. How ready is the IBM consulting organization to consult on clouds other than the IBM cloud? Historically, there's been more focus on selling IBM products. So how do you build that capability and credibility?
Well, I mean, as I said before, we've actually been skilling ourselves up across this entire hybrid multi-cloud world for a long time. And we have very, very deep skills in AWS. We have very deep skills in Google, very deep skills in Azure. We've been building up across and other cloud solutions. So I think that the teams and the capability to underpin and leverage all these cloud environments, meet our clients where they are, has been there all the time. I do think, and I mentioned this in my commentary, that the credibility that we're turning up as that trusted multi-cloud partner, maybe in the past some might have been concerned about the proprietary anchor we might have had. And I think that's something that now in terms of how we're thinking about our overall picture here, we have a really, really broader field to play in to be that trusted advisor, as well as, of course, you know, building incredibly deep skills in our own cloud solutions, building around these IBM cloud packs, which we're super excited about. So I think there's a big opportunity for us to play across that entire field.
You know, Pat, just because the guys really did a great job with writing the portal, so you'll see a lot of detail, but it doesn't mean you can't give Jim a question, okay? So, seriously, the poor guy is going to, you know. They want to hear from Jim, too, so.
Okay. There are seriously not very many financial questions in here.
You did a really good job.
There are two or three questions, though, really on this topic. How do you measure success? And what are some of the milestones and metrics we should look for to understand the ongoing progress, and what level of are you going to report for Red Hat?
Well, I can
go
start
ahead.
There,
you
but then I, think, then I think then I think we should ask each of the people here up on stage how they're defining success, because everyone here has a component of this model. But I would bring it in three tiers. The first tier, which is really centered around the presentation I just went through, and that is when you bring IBM and Red Hat together, what is it going to mean to our financial model and our investment thesis overall? And I think what you saw here in the midterm, we are going to put IBM on a sustained revenue growth profile. So that's the ultimate measure of success, that the entire boat lifts up when you bring both of these together. And we said over the next couple of years, we'd be 4 to 5 points of growth incremental with this acquisition and 2 to 3 in 2021. Second thing is free cash flow. Just given the non-cash purchase accounting entries, we should be seeing that free cash flow with the cash generation of Red Hat going forward, that be delivered first, accretive in the first 12 months, and $1.5 billion by 2021. So the two measures externally, I think, for our investor at the IBM level are going to be the revenue growth profile, acceleration, and free cash flow generation so we can get our targeted leverage ratios back within a couple years. So that's kind of the, I would say, the first tier. The second tier, it's very important both for our investors and us internally that we continue to drive both the base and the growth of Red Hat. So going forward, we will show a comparable Red Hat financial performance at the top line so you could see with transparency what we're doing around Red Hat. And as we take that mid-teens growth, and we continue to accelerate that over time. And then I would say then the third tier, and I'll pass it off to my colleagues, the third tier is within each of the individual business units. You know, we've got a very big dependency on cloud and cognitive software with a marked inflection. We got a big component around services. That's the two gorillas of the $1.2 trillion market opportunity. I'll let them speak for how they define success, and then Jim maybe on the Red Hat side.
All right. So, look, I talked a lot about how we're going to go into the hybrid cloud opportunity and the $350 billion opportunity. To us, it's clear. It's two things. One, we need to drive OpenShift as the platform on which our software runs, and we got to measure the number in the top 2,000 clients, and that's what we measure ourselves on. That leads to an overall architecture win, and that architecture win turns into value for our clients. Second, Jim already mentioned, accelerating cloud and cognitive software to double-digit revenue growth in 2020 is then the outcome of all of those client wins. And, of course, we're going to make OpenShift the preferred platform for all of our software to run on.
I think in terms of services, clearly having services on a sustained revenue growth path is going to be the key metric of success here overall. Also, I think as we look inside the picture, we should understand the client references, the clients we're working with now, where we've expanded our footprint to be their trusted end-to-end cloud journey partner. And, of course, the new clients that we bring on board who are going to also, you know, this new permission that we have allows us to break into it and build new relationships. I also think we should have a view around success in terms of how far we've gone in making OpenShift, you know, the default platform for all the work we're doing in applications across our services business.
Jim, back to you then.
Yeah, so let me break that into two pieces. So, you know, we have our established businesses that, you know, are still growing double digit that I think we can accelerate on. So we have very, very high renewal rates, which is a combination of growth and cross-sell. We want to take those renewal rates and expand them, and we'll be watching that carefully because the breadth and depth of IBM should allow us to grow those relationships more. We intend to continue to add new customers, and that's something that we look at all the time as well. So we expect that to happen. That's for our core. For our platforms like OpenShift, where we're driving adoption, you know, there's an additional set of measures we look at. So how many logos? So where are we landing them? How many marquee customer wins that we can go out as references that are kind of the leaders in industries where when they adopt, you see a knock-on effect across those industries? Then workloads and workload growth within those, because if you land it but you don't get workloads running on it, you know, they're less likely to renew. And so we have a very clear path that we've gone with before on Linux that we went on with OpenStack, and we'll be following that same set of metrics over time and how we work to drive OpenShift as the default choice hybrid multi-cloud platform.
But Pat, can I just interject? Because one topic we didn't get to talk enough about is, Jim, why don't you talk about the developer community? You had it on your charts. You referenced it as you did. But back to that earlier question about one of the things we admire very much about what Jim has done is the developer community, which is a vibrant, and they've done a super job. It's huge. And maybe talk a little bit about how you measure its success, how you help make developers successful.
Well, so, you know, developers want to write code, and so making it easiest for them to write code and easiest for them for it to deploy anywhere are critical. So we're involved in a number of upstream communities, whether that's helping drive the frameworks to run well on a Red Hat infrastructure or literally helping drive the next generation of Java, for instance, and how you make Java more capable of running on in a containerized, more microservices orientation. And so We have a developer program in how we bring people in on our platforms, and we look at total numbers there. We look at engagement, how many people are, you know, coming to the site each month or signing up and actually leveraging the tools in the developer program. And then there's our work in open source communities where we literally are helping drive the innovation in languages and frameworks. And we look at those as well and our participation in those and size of those communities. So developers are critical, 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 right? All of this infrastructure is running applications, and winning the hearts and minds of the developers is something deep, deep, deep in our DNA and something that, you know, we'll continue to push really hard to do.
Okay. Why don't we take one last question then? There are a couple of questions here around competition. One's a little more specific, one's a little bit more general, but I think that's a good place to end. The specific one is around Google and Anthos, and as the questioner says, which appears to a layperson to be competitive with OpenShift, but they're a longtime Red Hat partner. How can you explain, how OpenShift is positioned versus Anthos? And then there are also a couple of just more generic questions around, as public cloud providers start to deliver hybrid cloud, really what is your competitive advantage?
Okay. Why don't I let the two of you, let me let Jim start, because when you speak of Anthos, I think it's important for Jim to also explain the role Red Hat has in those key technologies. Remember, I listed Linux, containers, and Kubernetes. You're going to be surprised at who's driving a majority of that before I give their answers, is this way. And then I'll let Arvind then jump into the one about the differences, because I think by the nature of that question, We still got to be clear about what horizontal means. Just because someone may do hybrid between their own software to their own public cloud, that is a proprietary stack. And so, again, I will let them both expound on my answer now.
I'll start and then I'll hand it to Arvind. So, first off, the hybrid multi-cloud, when we say that, we're not talking about managing workloads that are running across the clouds. We're literally talking about the same software stack running across all the clouds. And we're the only player who's currently doing that. And we saw this in the same way, if you go back to the Unix days, well, it's kind of all Unix, but they all drift a little bit, and now one workload can't move from one Unix to a different Unix. That's what we're seeing happen with container platforms if you look at Amazon's versus Google's versus Microsoft's. The only way to have the same software stack, the same container platform across all of those deployment models, including on-premise, is OpenShift. So, you know, our vision is very, very different in that it is have the same bits running everywhere. We are a leader in these communities. We're either the largest or second largest contributor to Linux, to Kubernetes, Istio, all the major open source projects that make up a container platform. So our ability to influence direction in those is unparalleled. And for an enterprise, again, you want a partner where you say, well, I need these features. You expect your vendor to be able to supply those. And that's one of the key reasons why we stay so involved in those upstream communities. Our product's GA'd, coming specifically to Anthos. So Google is a big partner of ours. We run a lot of OpenShift for our customers, or our customers run it on Google. So they're a partner. They clearly have a platform. It's only virtualized. If you're running on-premise, it's got to be running on VMware. It's not GA'd. So there are a lot of differences in terms of just where it stands in the life cycle, as well as the vision of where we're looking to take it.
Look, I think Jim answered a lot of it, but I'll add one. In the end, the platforms are also useful only if you have a lot of workloads that run on them. So the advantage of taking all of the IBM middleware, but also a lot of open source and other innovation, which is already certified to both Red Hat Linux and to OpenShift, and bring that across all these clouds, is what fuels the usage and excites all the developers. And that's a big difference on top of all the horizontal advantages and the community influence that Jim laid out.
Well, I'll wrap that with, if you refer back to Arvind's slide, sometimes we affectionately call it the plumbing slide, you will notice there is no other company on there whose platform can run on everyone else's in the exact same way so work can move. So, again, it is the only one, even based on the question. And so that's really our opportunity ahead. That's why Jim showed you the chart that said, I've established Red Hat Linux. The next platform to be established is OpenShift. I got a great head start here. We are one of the people that can scale it. This is what he and I many times talked about in as we talked about an acquisition, because it had to do with, look, when you go to big clients to scale, this would eat up Red Hat to do one big bank. And our ability to do that is something we have done for decades. And so that is the opportunity ahead of us. I think you already see the reaction from our clients. You see it in our confidence with what Jim talked to you about in a midterm model here. And you see a company that is entirely oriented against one goal here. And so it is with that that we appreciate that all the investors, potential investors and others alike, took the time to listen to this story. And Pat, I know we'll answer. There'll be more follow-ups. And again, the portal, the team really did go to great lengths to be very transparent, particularly as it comes to the second half, to help you, because we do realize there are a number of dynamics here. But and we have to separate between what, as Jim many times tried to say, was non-cash, et cetera, so that you see the real health of the underlying businesses. And then, so Pat, if you want to wrap up with how you're going to get
Just a couple of comments. As I said, as Ginny said, we do have the article out on the investor website. I think it'll answer most of your questions. There are a couple of other questions we did not get to. IBM IR is available at all times. We'll be doing some callbacks this afternoon, so we will make sure that we get back to everybody that submitted a question. And thank you all very much for joining us for these last 2 hours.